Professors FM.
Welcome, everyone. Welcome to the Fanalytics Podcast with Mike Lewis and Doug Battle, brought to you by Emory's Marketing Analytics Center. Doug, seems like for as long as we've been doing it, every time the NBA playoffs come around, we talk about this is like a platform, right? This is an opportunity for the next generation of players to shine, to step up. Doug, this year, it seems to be about sort of reruns with LeBron James and Steph Curry, and I don't even know, how do we even describe this on a PG or G rated show? A lot of aggressive hand checking, perhaps.
I think there's been some below the belt.
Good.
Unnecessary below the belt action. I don't. And, maybe that's a worse way of putting it.
And the guys making the headlines are not Luka Doncic, and I mean, I guess Trae Young's had some nice games, but it's not this next generation of stars, right? I mean, for the Grizzlies, it's Dylan Brooks more than Ja Morant, right?
Yeah, well, I think this playoff so far, it's just been so dominated by little scuffles, little controversies, some odd officiating where James Harden inadvertently makes a slight contact below the belt on accident.
But Joel Embiid is doing
Joel Embiid does karate on the floor. Well, they call it, but they didn't kick him out of the same basketball game. And so Draymond Green back with his antics. I personally enjoyed Draymond Green's response when asked about being down 2-0. Your team's never been down 2-0. And he smiles and he's like, it's going to be fun to come back from, isn't it? This is going to be fun. And I saw that. And usually when guys say stuff like that, I'm like, oh, they just screwed their team over. Like they jinxed it. I actually thought at that point, the Warriors, not because of that, but the Warriors looking at the situation with a veteran-led team that's been there a million times and a young team that gets up and they're a little excited about themselves. Mike Brown is a coach, guy who hasn't had a ton of playoff success. I see the Warriors coming back and winning. Now it's tied. I see them winning that series. I know they haven't been good on the road this year, but I feel like I've seen it a million times, Mike, when the young, inexperienced team, I mean, I've seen it with Georgia's had teams over the years in football. Several years back when I was in school, they would get a lead on Alabama almost every time. They get all excited and then Alabama comes back and does what they do. And so I kind of see the Warriors doing that in this series. I don't see them going out to a young, inexperienced team. But I think that series is the talk of the playoffs. And I think some of the extracurriculars with Draymond Green, some of the players on the Kings kind of getting into it, a lot of trash talk. I think that drives fandom. It drives enthusiasm. You watch those games, Sacramento fans, they haven't had a playoff series in like 20 years. They are rowdy. And Golden State's fans have always been that way. And they have not stopped. Great home atmospheres for both teams. They're going to be tough to win on the road for either team. But like I said, Mike, I feel like that series has been the talk of the playoffs. Now, I got to counter you on the old guys feeling like reruns with these old stars kind of stealing the spotlight. Because normally the first round, you're right. Normally it's Luka Doncic. Normally it's kind of those like fringe teams that have a young star who really blossoms and puts their team and their star power into the limelight. Anthony Edwards, Mike. Anthony Edwards. When Michael Jordan's son played at Illinois, I know a lot of people were disappointed and felt like they expected more from Michael Jordan's son. And there's a theory out there that Anthony Edwards is Michael Jordan's son. And so we're actually getting what we wanted through Anthony Edwards. He is the long lost son of Michael Jordan out here. By the way, younger than Michael Jordan was when he was in college still.
Time out. Is this a legit theory? Is this like when they show the royal family and they show Diana's horse riding instructor and it looks just like Harry? Is it that kind of theory?
Yeah, it's Michael Jordan. Okay. You can pick their faces. You can put Jordan on one side, half of his face and half of Anthony Edwards' face. It's the same face. It's a different hairstyle, same face. They have the same face. You make Anthony Edwards bald, he's Michael Jordan, Michael Jordan Jr. And he's been playing like it. I think that's been fun for me. Like, of course, I'm a Georgia guy. I've always liked Anthony. And the thing about Anthony Edwards, we've talked about the Timberwolves being the least disciplined team in basketball. Edwards, even after the last game, came out and said it was that game was personal to him because he didn't want his team to get swept, which it's like, oh, that's cool. But also it's almost admitting defeat in the series to just say that one. It meant something to us, so we decided to win one. And so we don't lose 4-0. Instead, they're going to lose like 4-1 or maybe 4-2. But nonetheless, Anthony Edwards has been a star. It's unfortunate that he plays on the team that he does because he was very close. I don't know if you remember this, but the Golden State Warriors had the best odds at the number one pick the year that he came out in the draft. The lottery determined that the Warriors would get like the third pick, where they got James Wiseman, who's not even on the team anymore. Definitely a bust, definitely considered a bust. And Anthony Edwards goes to the Timberwolves. So he could be playing with Steph Curry right now in a parallel universe. And I think playing with the Timberwolves has allowed him to showcase his talents more, where he's the guy at times. And that last game, you watch it and you think about how young this kid is. I don't know, he's 21 and putting on some performances where, again, the only thing keeping me from saying Anthony Edwards is going to be that guy, he's going to be the star of the league, is maturity. And I don't say that in the sense of I don't think he's like criminal or some of these, we'll talk about the NFL, some of these associations that coaches are making with NFL prospects. Anthony Edwards isn't like that, I don't think. I more mean like, I know coming into the NBA, there was actual legitimate concern as to whether or not he even liked basketball. And he's an absolute treat to watch his interviews. If you see him, there's been a number of viral moments in his interviews over the years, kind of Marshawn Lynch type. But I think the verdict's still out on, can he be like a true professional and have the diligence, have that Kobe Bryant work ethic to be that type of star, that next tier star. So he's the young guy right now who's kind of escalating his brand and his perception in the league. And that's been my favorite part of the playoffs thus far.
That's fair. I mean, and again, that's sort of the beauty of the first round. Doug, I just looked up the picture and I'm not totally convinced that he's Michael Jordan's son. I see the split image where they put the faces together. It's well worth investigating beyond 2 minutes on the podcast, though. I love these kind of things. But, you know, it's great because this is the first round of the playoffs should be the time when these young guys get to take center stage and get to elevate their brands. I want to add a couple other things to some of the comments you made. Number one, I'm always up for the changing of the guard in the NBA. So I want to root for Sacramento. I will not root for any fan base with the Cowbells.
It's
terrible. No, just enough.
Have you been to a Mississippi State game?
No, and I wouldn't go. I would turn down tickets to that. That sounds hellish to have these guys clanging those things in your ears for hours.
It's not pleasant. I think probably every student probably leaves school with permanent hearing damage. You don't meet a lot of audio engineers that come out of Mississippi State, and I think it's because of the Cowbells. My question is why with Sacramento? Mississippi State, it kind of makes sense. Like, they're basically, if you've been to their campus, you basically feel like you're on a farm. It's in the middle of nowhere. Sacramento, what's the Cowbell thing for? What's that about?
I don't know. Is Sacramento like getting into like the agricultural region of California?
I mean, I'm sure it's just, I don't know. I don't associate cows with even the agricultural part of California.
I mean, but you know what you could do? Like the glamour of LA or the tech industry of San Francisco. And I could see the people in San Francisco going, "Eh, we're hayseeds. Let's get out the Cowbells," right? Sort of drive those folks nuts. The other one, Doug, and I don't know how much you followed this. Phil Jackson sort of stepped up and stepped in it by talking about too much politics in the NBA game. And he also was decimated by what I saw on Twitter. Now, I doubt that Phil Jackson particularly cares, but to me, the NBA first round sort of, we're a little, you know, like, I feel like every year we get these great narratives in the first round. Maybe this year we got some okay narratives. And I think a lot more of it's kind of Draymond Green and the low blows, this kind of stuff. Phil Jackson lighting it up a little bit on social media and taking a ton of heat. It's a mix. I've enjoyed the first round more in previous years. I'll leave it at that.
Yeah, apparently Phil Jackson's a racist, and I say that tongue in cheek, of course, but that's kind of what's been thrown out there because he doesn't support the politicization. That's a weird word. Yeah. For politics. It's really, I think, the NBA catering to one side of the aisle. And he's like, hey,
where it's interesting, right, is Jordan famously said Republicans buy sneakers too. I don't know what his current feeling.
Maybe he got that from Phil Jackson.
Yeah, but it was, I saw that Twitter was dragging Michael Jordan through the mud as well on all this. It was kind of an interesting little aside. I was kind of grateful that it didn't seem to, it was a story that was out there for a day and then moved on. I'll just say this, Doug, I'm looking forward to the second round of the NBA. I feel like this one's almost just a little too cluttered, and I don't have the stories I'm looking for. I don't have the Knicks fans chanting Trey is bald. I don't have Luka Doncic looking like the league MVP. So it's mixed for me.
Well, what we have had is more karate kicks than any round of basketball in NBA history.
You think I'd like that, right?
You're a martial arts guy.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think Draymond Green started that trend a few years back. I played basketball, Mike. I don't remember that ever happening in a game. I mean, I've seen basketballs when someone's going out of bounds and they're just throwing the ball back in bounds where it's thrown probably not in the best.
It seems like they're watching each other.
Yeah, and they're we can do that?
I can go viral, right?
How long before Rudy Gobert has his moment, though? I mean, they've only got one game left, probably. Like, they're going to be on the road and it's an elimination game. But it seems like we're overdue for a Rudy Gobert moment these playoffs.
We can only hope. Of course, the big story of this week, I mean, the NBA playoffs are sort of center stage, but as the week goes on, we will build towards the NFL draft.
Oh, yeah.
This is almost reminiscent of a couple of years ago where we had Trevor Lawrence and Trey Lance and Justin Fields. This year, we've got another sort of I'm not going to say it's a great quarterback class. I don't know if it's a good quarter. I don't even know if it's a good quarterback class. But we've got the NFL draft is absolutely dominated by the narrative surrounding the quarterbacks. The top prospects in the draft are probably, and again, opinions are going to vary on this, but it's the linebacker from Alabama and probably the defensive tackle from Georgia. But in terms of the attention, it is the four quarterbacks. Now, you and I think are going to differ because at this point, I'm much more interested in kind of the storylines. And so my top guy on the draft board became Will Levis. And I don't know how that happened because it sort of snuck up on me as he went from the lunacy of, at first with eating the bananas and the mayonnaise and the coffee, I was like, this is just silly. But his latest social media moment of throwing the ball through the uprights from the 50-yard line on his knees, I'm like, okay, I like this. This is like reminiscent of Jeff George. I want that quarterback out there on the field that can throw these stunning laser beam-like balls, and it's just kind of fun to watch.
You mean Jamarcus Russell?
Yeah, okay. No, I mean, my Levis balloon, Doug, was something that was going to be very easy to pop.
I just popped it right there. Yeah. No, so I'm hearing some rumors about Will Levis jumping into the two spot. And that would really, because at this point, I think that it's a not so well kept secret that Bryce Young's going number one to the Panthers. That was up for debate for a while, but I think the information's out there. It's always kind of anticlimactic, that number one pick, because they do a 15-minute countdown and everyone knows what's going to happen. And then it happens exactly how you would expect. And so it's like the draft starts at number two with the Texans. And I'm looking at one mock draft with Will Anderson from Alabama going there. For the longest time, Jalen Carter was projected to that spot, but you know, he's a guy that I wouldn't be shocked to see drop surprise, like to be the guy where everyone's kind of surprised on draft night.
Well, I'm going to tell you, I'll give you a prediction on the guy that the cameras are going to follow as his draft, as his position plummets. And that's Anthony Richardson.
Oh, yeah. If his position plummets.
Yeah. But that one is like tailor made for him to be around at like pick number 15 or 16 before he goes off the board. Yeah. But, you know, Jalen Carter he's that classic example of like this trickle of negative information, and no one knows how to deal with the negative information. So, of course, there was the arrest on the eve or the morning of the combine? But then the follow up is he's gained 9 or 10 pounds.
Yeah, right. And there's always these anonymous sources that come out. NFL coach, NFL scout, former Georgia coach, or people on Georgia staff. I read something saying that they couldn't get anyone on Georgia's staff to really vouch for his character, which is a concern. And again, this is all anonymous. So it's like, it could be somebody on Reddit, somebody just totally making it up. But that information, once it's out there, you can't like disassociate it with the person. And so I think that there's this perception now that there are character issues, or at least maturity issues, with his arrest and with there was stuff at Georgia that was a little bit concerning. I remember the Missouri game. He got into a scuffle before the game during warmups with the other team and got in a shouting fest. And he's now being described as a player who can be great if he wants to be great. And people don't know if he wants to be great. There's that. I remember I mentioned earlier, there was a question with Anthony Edwards coming into the NBA as to whether he really loved basketball. And they're still he's still one of those guys where it's like, if he has that Kobe Bryant mentality, he can be Kobe Bryant, but no one actually thinks he really has that mentality. And with Jalen Carter, it's like, apparently the rumor is that the Georgia coaches had to be on him at all times to make sure he was in shape, because if they weren't, he would just totally be out of shape. And again, these are rumors, this is speculation, but this is the information. And sometimes it's like, when there's smoke, there's fire. But on the flip side to that, in the NFL, sometimes these teams will leak information like that to try to drive down the interest in the player so that they can get a steal if they have a later pick. And so the Georgia fans I know will come out and say, oh, he's a great kid, and this is just some team that wants him to fall to them, putting this information out there anonymously.
But Doug, I think the other thing is, these guys are all, they're all brands at this point, right? They're all sort of almost becoming actively managed as brands, right? And so I think the trickle of negative information ends up being almost more of an issue, right? When you start to say, hey, this kid's at Georgia, he's in a very professionally run program. Mm-hmm. He's probably had an agent for a year and a half because of NIL, right? Who's been giving him some advice, and yet we still see these negative signals, right? I mean, and again, it's that tough thing where if we all kind of, and especially you got those of us outside of the inner circle, right, where we don't actually get to talk to these people, we don't have any choice except to sort of, you know, how funny is this? We get these pieces of information from Twitter, and then we sort of decide on what the pattern means, mm-hmm. right? And it all comes down to how the pattern was generated. The other guy, where there's some weirdness going on, right, of course, is CJ Stroud. And yeah. A truly bizarre story where – what was it? Brady Quinn tweeted that he might be dropping because some people have said that he blew off some quarterback camp run by the Mannings. And then all of ESPN sort of jumping in, defending CJ Stroud, and Brady Quinn, I think almost rightfully saying, I was asked why he might be dropping, right? And so there's these kind of layers that the folks that are aware of the inside conversations, maybe you can't even allude to what's going on in those. I mean, maybe Quinn is completely dead on that's what's going on. There's some strange back and forth within the NFL community about Stroud not showing up to things he said he was going to show up to. None of us are going to know, but it just becomes drama for us to watch.
Yeah, it's interesting with Stroud, because my impression of Stroud after the Peach Bowl in Atlanta, Georgia fans loved Stroud. They were saying, I hope the Falcons take him. His opponents admired him because the way he handled his loss with dignity, his interviews were pure class. I know Georgia fans that were comparing Stetson Bennett, the championship quarterback, to CJ Stroud and saying, I wish we had someone more humble like CJ Stroud, who's going to be a top five pick at the time, at least. And so he's a guy who I never heard a murmur of negative information about prior to the draft process. And now that it's almost draft night, there's character concerns, even though there weren't during his playing days. It was never an issue before.
But again, the weirdness of all of this, right? He's in a tightly controlled, very professional program in Ohio State. And so you wouldn't expect to hear anything.
Well, right? And that's what I've heard with Jalen Carter, is that he...
Doug, let me add one more thing to this.
His incident happened like 2 days into his freedom. He was no longer under the rule of Kirby Smart and his tightly operated system that kind of protects players and controls players and keeps them out of trouble and keeps them in shape and all the rest. And 2 days in, he gets arrested. 2 weeks in, he's put on 10 pounds. He can't function independently. And that's the concern.
Okay. But, and again, let's sort of take a step back and think about, and so we are all just watching this. We could be watching The Real Housewives for how much of this might be reality for us. But the thing is, unlike The Real Housewives, this is stuff that we really care about, right? So the minds go through these, like, we're all sort of running these internal algorithms to decipher what information is valid and what information is worth taking seriously. What I was going to say, the other thing that's kind of interesting about this whole CJ Stroud story is the number of the guys defending Stroud, especially the ESPN, RG3, and I forget the other ones, the other one that sort of started with the initial tweet, but they are sort of almost going off on the Mannings, right? Which almost made me think, like, Stroud doesn't need to show homage to the Mannings, which almost made me start to, and again, this is like these internal algorithms, that almost made me think, maybe this story is real, and it's the Mannings that are talking about it.
Maybe. I don't know. I mean, it doesn't seem like Peyton and Eli Manning are easily irritated, agitated guys. So if they're going out saying something about a kid, there might be such a cause for concern. They're certainly well respected around the league. I mean, they might be the most likable figures in sports.
But Doug, the Manning's stealing their brand too. So you got to say this. Well, it's a house of mirrors. We're never going to be able to figure out what happens until these guys have been in the league for 5 years.
Yeah. And with these things, I'm usually skeptical that the media speculation plays into actual GM decisions. Mm-hmm. But with that said, if you're a GM and you're 50-50 between two players, yeah, and one of them is Jalen Carter, and it's, well, I don't know. There's speculation that Georgia had to have him on a short leash, and as soon as he got off of it, he got in trouble. Or CJ Stroud, I don't know. I heard something about, you know, the Mannings didn't like him, or there's some concern about his character or his professionalism. And then you go with that other guy. If you're 50-50 between two players and one of the players doesn't have any smoke around him and one of them does, you tend to go with the other guy. So I think, like, we have seen players drop in these situations.
Doug, and I think the thing to add to that is then once I've seen the Panthers make that decision, because maybe the Panthers know that the Manning story is true and it was sort of egregious, then I pass on them and I take
Must know something I don't.
Yeah. And then I'm taking the guy that maybe was falling in the draft boards because he was eating a banana with the peel on it and putting mayonnaise in his coffee.
Innocent, right? Stuff.
Yeah, maybe innocent.
That might have been a brilliant move by Will Levis, because when all the he created attention, but it was in a very innocent kind of weirdness
anyway, and, right?
Yeah. And where it's like, well, yeah, that's weird, but you don't have character concerns about that. So he created concerns that are very minor, and right, that kept people from criticizing other things about him.
Every once in a while, someone will, like, rather than use butter on a grilled cheese sandwich, they'll use mayo. Right. And then, so, I mean, look, I don't know. Maybe mayo works fine in coffee, right? Maybe it's just about adding fat, and it's actually something kind of innovative. Couldn't tell you.
Tom Brady's got some weird stuff that he does. He doesn't drink. He doesn't drink while he eats. Like, he won't drink liquid while he's eating. He'll eat and then drink, or drink and then eat. But there's like 45 minutes between the two. It's some weird thing. Like he's got his weird little isms. So, yeah. So I know the other exciting one that we've loved to talk about is Anthony Richardson, a guy I've seen projected at number one at times, now number two at times, and I've seen him as far back as like 15. Could he be our Brady Quinn this year that slips back because all cameras on him and talk as to whether it's what this is in regards to? Of course, as we know, it's probably, if it happens, in regards to his actual performance on the field and not combine performance.
Doug, I think he's the most likely to do that, right? I mean,
I think Jalen Carter is personally, okay. But
lacks most of like the Parcells rules for who you take at a quarterback position. Not enough starts, not enough victories, not going to graduate. I don't think that any of them graduate anymore. So it's Richardson looks like that kind of classic one-year wonder. And it isn't even a one-year wonder, right? It's a combine warrior kind of
performance.
And I don't know that anyone can come up with a quarterback that was a combine warrior that then went on to a stellar career.
I think people will say Josh Allen, but Josh Allen had a lot more success in college, I think.
Yeah, well, he was at Wyoming.
We just didn't hear about him because he was at Wyoming, but he was tearing it up. It was kind of like Carson Wentz was perceived that way, but it's like he won national championships in college. Yeah, I'm trying to think of, I think some people viewed Mahomes as a project. He wasn't a number one pick. He was drafted like in the teens, I think. Lamar Jackson's another one that people viewed as a project. But again, Lamar Jackson won the Heisman.
Right.
Anthony Richardson didn't win the Heisman. He wasn't first team. I don't think he was second team in his conference.
Lamar Jackson had astonishing scoring numbers, I think, at Louisville as well, right?
He broke records. And he fell still. So it's almost like if he fell, Anthony Richardson, it should be expected for him to fall. It would almost be surprising if he went two or if he went in the top five. But he does have the physical tools, and apparently he interviewed well. He did. He crushed it. He crushed it after the season. And you look at a guy like this, we talked about how maybe Jalen Carter was, and again, speculation, maybe Jalen Carter, let's say Jalen Carter benefited from Georgia having him on a tight leash and performed at a higher level because he was constantly being put on the treadmill and his meals were cooked, custom made for certain eating schedule. And he had to eat those certain things. And as soon as he's off the leash, he's a different guy. He's not the same player. He's not going to perform at the same level. Maybe Anthony Richardson, you take him and you put him in a system like Georgia and he wins a national championship. He's thought of as this winner. He's thought of as this champion.
And this is next level fandom from a Georgia guy in the Florida system. Well,
put him in Alabama. Put him in Alabama. Put him in Alabama. Does he win as many games as Bryce Young? And is his perception this? Is he a Heisman candidate? Is his perception totally different?
Spurrier would have had him win three Heismans.
Yeah.
And I think 2 years, right?
Yeah. So maybe like you can look at him from that, like maybe he's underrated, even though a lot of people think he's overrated.
But again, we've talked about this in the past. This is all sort of probabilistic decision making. So it's like, what's your probability assessment that he's going to be a boom, or is he going to be a bust player? Or is he going to sort of perform as a typical first round quarterback, right? Is he just going to be a solid starter? Is he going to be a Pro Bowl player? Is he going to be out of the league? And like, what was it? Josh Rosen is the most, or Ryan Leaf or Jamarcus Russell, right? And I think there's a lot of data to suggest a high probability of a bust. And I think that's what everyone's, that's the concern with Richardson.
All right, Mike, I got a question. Anthony Richardson or Will Levis? You're on the clock. There's only two players on the board, and it's those two. Who's going to have this successful? Neither can we say is definitely going to have a successful career. Who's more likely to succeed at the next level?
Okay, well, and I'm just going to give you my internal algorithm, because I think when we're trying to figure out these guys, what we're trying to do is sort of figure out the insider's information, right? And so when I look at these guys, I lean towards Will Levis at this point. And I know that seems kind of strange, and it is almost more related to the way Anthony Richardson is covered, right? Where I think as Dan Orlovsky, I've heard talk about Richardson a lot on ESPN. They like go through a list of like, he's got amazing physical tools. He's got a great football IQ. He has an amazing work ethic. And I listen to all of this and I kind of go, well, then why isn't the performance there? Right. And so then I start to process that and I go, so I don't know where the gap is, but it seems like they're trying to hide a gap for some reason. Well, in contrast, the storyline on Will Levis is, oh God, this guy is just, he's just beyond goofy. Right. And then they roll out the videos and then they show, but then they do show like some of the amazing physical tools as well, like throwing the ball through the uprights from his knees at the 50-yard line. And Doug, I'm going to be honest with you. I don't fully get it. And we've talked about this for years. For some reason, the media machine, in particular ESPN, falls in love with certain quarterbacks and falls out of love with other quarterbacks. I'm not trusting at this point of the quarterbacks with, let's say, trying to find the right word, certain, not dubious is too strong, but with mixed profiles in terms of accomplishments mm-hmm. and talents that ESPN falls in love with. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so that's why I then sort of shift towards Will Levis. But again, think about what I'm doing. I'm being honest about it. It's not that I've studied all the stats. I haven't done all the analytics. It's that I'm sort of almost, I'm looking at what I can see and then making inferences in terms of the coverage.
Yeah, I think if I'm in that position, I don't think either one has a high likelihood of success, but I would go with Richardson just purely on the upside. I think he has a higher upside, and I think they both have a pretty bad downside. I could see both of them.
Frankly, I think it's a coin flip. I mean, but
all right, one last quarterback I want to touch on. I mean, we mentioned Stroud, but it's more the bias that goes into how people evaluate Stroud that I want to talk about. Ohio State quarterbacks. Historically, in recent years at least, haven't succeeded in the NFL. Those top 10 picks, whether it's, you know, and I don't know all these were top 10 picks, but there's been Justin Fields was, and then there's Pryor and Braxton Miller and JT Barrett. And I mean, it seems like my entire life, there's always been an Ohio State quarterback who looks like an NFL quarterback in college, gets drafted high, and fizzles out in the pros. And Fields might be the most successful of the guys I've listed. And he's still kind of, verdict still out on Justin Fields. And so is it unfair to CJ Stroud to look at him and say, he's another Ohio State quarterback, I'm going to take a different guy because he's more likely to bust or fizzle out because he played in the same system as these other guys that looked amazing in college and didn't pan out?
Look, as we go into the NFL draft, and again, you and I have talked about this issue as well. There is always this notion of the comparable, right? And so we're going to compare this player to someone else who's played in the pros, right? Very often it's a guy that played at his own school. It's almost always a player of the same demographic background. When you started talking about Ohio State quarterbacks, I did a quick search in terms of top Ohio State quarterbacks in terms of NFL careers. It's pretty lean.
Joe Burrow leaves Ohio State, and then he has the success.
But it is almost like this notion, and again, not to get too in the weeds, like this notion of this availability bias where people evaluate these guys based on what they've seen in the past. It's hard not to be influenced by that, right?
I remember when Nick Chubb was coming out and hearing him compared to Todd Gurley, and those two could not be more different as far as how they run the football, how they're built, all that. But people look at him and say, the last Georgia running back to be drafted is MVP of the league right now. And this guy's in that same system and he's gone through that same schooling, if you will. It's almost like looking at a job candidate based on where they went to school. And so I think that Ohio State, it's like there's some legitimacy to it, but I'm also like, is it unfair? Because should we just look at these guys on a one-by-one case? Or is that information valuable in evaluating a guy like Stroud?
I think we should look at him. I think we should look at him on a one-to-one. So in this case, I think we look at the success of Ohio State quarterbacks, and then we sort of consciously adjust if that might be something that's causing us to downwardly rate Stroud, mm-hmm. right? Because what a quarterback that was produced by Urban Meyer, what does that have to do with CJ Stroud? Mm-hmm. Nothing. Essentially, same very kind of substantial professional, well, I don't know what you want to call Urban Meyer professional after everything that came out, but the same kind of high-end, high-resource program competing in the Big Ten, and Ohio State has been dominant. I think people start to make up stories, right? Ohio State quarterbacks perform better because they play in a Big Ten that is systematically weaker than the opponents that you're going to play in the SEC. So they end up with inflated stats, et cetera, right? Mm-hmm. But I think what you have to do is you go, it's almost like you have to go in the reverse and say, these Ohio State quarterbacks have not panned out. So am I downwardly biasing Stroud because of that?
Yeah. Yeah, that's, I just keep seeing that conversation popping up with Stroud. Every time his name comes up, a lot of people dismiss him and say, he played at Ohio State quarterback, the last 10 guys to do that, didn't succeed. Part of me likes Stroud because I've watched him play. I've seen his best moments, and I've also seen some pretty pedestrian play from him. And he's a guy that at the end of the day, under the big lights, he played his best football. And you can't say that about Anthony Richardson. You can't say that about Will Levis. And like I said, Justin Fields was kind of like a better prospect, really, than Stroud coming out. Like, bigger, faster, stronger, more accurate passer. And he led his team to a national championship game where they lost, but he had a great playoff performance as well. And he hasn't panned out. And so it's, you can't help but compare the guy to the guy before him at that school. And that's where I think players at Alabama have, and players at Georgia, players at these schools, like Bryce Young, Tua was the last guy. And like, he's hanging in there. He's doing pretty well. But as a whole, like, a half of the NFL's players are Alabama or Georgia or LSU players, and or Florida, a couple of those SEC teams. And so there's no question as to, did he play good enough competition? Was he in a, has he practiced in an NFL type environment and done the weight training and done the, and so guys like that seem to have an advantage. And I think that's why we're seeing more on the transfer portal. That's another reason for players. Like, if Will Levis, if Bama, this year, if they had been in the same quarterback situation a year ago and Will Levis transfers in and he's QB1 and they go win 12 games, whatever.
He's the first pick.
Yeah, he's probably the first pick in the draft. And same with Anthony Richardson. And so that's where there is kind of a bias to the programs that these guys play for.
Yeah, and again, it's probably an over. But, you know, and again, this is why I think we just, it's almost like, what this conversation is leading to is kind of the limitations of analytics, right? Because you start to get into all these kind of soft factors, right? Where, well, because you could start, again, you start to tell these stories. So let's say Levis did come in, and as a transfer, now he's working with Nick Saban in an incredibly professionally run program.
All and NFL now, receivers, NFL offensive yeah. line, running backs.
But now he learns he develops these leadership traits, and he gets polished up by the Alabama media machine, and suddenly he's that prototypical number one pick in the draft. Because Levis is also physically impressive, right? Especially compared to Bryce Young, right? So it's almost an automatic thing, right? But again, how much do we need to – and you're never going to be able to figure it out just based on whatever data we have available to us as the general public. How much do we – sort of, because we get into something kind of funny here, right? Played at Ohio State. We are going to discount your accomplishments because of what they've done. You play at Alabama. Well, Hurts, Tua, Mac Jones.
Their last three quarterbacks are starting NFL quarterbacks.
Right. And their next one is going to be the first overall pick.
Yeah.
Right. I don't even know. I don't even know who's next up at Alabama. But I would guess they're going to be a top 10 quarterback prospect in the NFL, right?
Probably. They had the best quarterback display at their spring game, but that's a discussion for another day. They'll get some guy in the transfer portal come in, and he'll be a top 10 pick next year or 2 years from now. So,
okay, moving on, our final division in our rundown of the quarterback narratives from the last NFL season is the NFC West. Doug, at the top of that division, we've got what I think is in some ways a strange story, and that's the San Francisco 49ers. Because it appears that whoever they plug in performs exceptionally. Now,
Brock Purdy.
Brock Purdy, he was Mr. Irrelevant, right? Mm-hmm. So the last pick in the NFL draft, Jimmy G, who doesn't seem to get a lot of, never seems to get really a lot of love. I think he had I looked at the stats. It was something like 16 touchdowns and 4 interceptions.
Numbers
which is
are great.
A great ratio.
Yeah.
Purdy's ratio was just about the same as Jimmy G's. Jimmy G has now moved on. Now we get into this debate of, is Brock Purdy the guy, or is this now a competition between Trey Lance and Brock Purdy? And it seems like the 49ers are also mentioned with just about every potential quarterback acquisition out there as well.
I love Brock Purdy, though. I love Brock Purdy. I love his story. I could see I could see a Jimmy G type situation with him where he kind of plateaus at pretty good and the fans grow disgruntled.
I haven't run the numbers, but I suspect that if you run the numbers, that those San Francisco were, because historically Jimmy G was a plus one kind of win guy. So an above average player. I assume that that might be the same thing for Brock Purdy. And so the implication of that, right, is that the 49ers are a plus five kind of team, right? And so whoever gets that job is actually going to look, Derek Carr would have looked great out there.
It's right? Like being the quarterback at Alabama.
Exactly. Just
talking, if Tom Brady hadn't retired, that would be my landing spot for him.
Or maybe he comes maybe back. He comes,
right? I mean, what did Brett? I think Brett Favre came out of retirement twice. He retired with the Packers, and then with the Jets, and then played for the Vikings after that. So it's not unprecedented. Yeah, Los Angeles Rams, Mike. They won a Super Bowl. Coach is kind of thought of as this brilliant next big thing in coaching. And they made a Super Bowl with Jared Goff a couple years back, too. So at that time, he was already being considered in those terms. Matt Stafford, Super Bowl MVP. They return almost everybody from that team. Aaron Darnold don't make the playoffs this year. Some injuries contributed to that. But, man, I don't know if I've seen a team look so different from one year to the next.
They were 5-12, right? I mean, yeah. It was an amazing
to go from Super Bowl winning to 5-12 with the same core intact.
A historical collapse, in fact.
Yeah. I don't know what's happening there, and it begs the question that is LA going to remain, or the Rams going to remain LA's team with the Chargers kind of on the come up? I think winning that Super Bowl was huge for the Rams in terms of establishing themselves as kind of the alpha team, like they're the Lakers. And
but was it enough?
I don't know. That's what I'm kind of getting at, is that
especially in the middle of all the COVID time, right? I mean,
yeah, it was weird. I mean, I think it benefited them that the Super Bowl was in their city, in their stadium that year. And so I think that they're kind of the default team for somebody, but are they going to stay that with one of the better young quarterbacks in the league playing in the same stadium in a different jersey? And for a team that's making the playoffs consistently, whereas the Rams might have been a one-hit wonder. We'll find out this year, but it's a little bit concerning. And like I said, they've bounced back before because they made the Super Bowl with same coach, different quarterback. Then they had a couple down years, and then they go and win a Super Bowl. So it's not that their window's closed, but it is a concerning trend.
You have a lot of faith in Stafford going forward?
No.
Okay. I mean, there's a lot
of Stafford. I love Stafford, by the way.
Miles on that body at this point, right?
Yeah. And I love Stafford. I hate that the majority of his prime was spent on really terrible teams. If he could have been in a situation like this when he was much younger, I think he would have won several Super Bowls. But given his age and when I've watched his performance, there's always kind of been some head scratching interceptions, even the year that when they won the Super Bowl. But you look at the talent in the NFL at quarterback, like I said, you look in the same stadium, the other guy. I think anyone in their right mind is going to take Justin Herbert right now. Again, Patrick Mahomes, Josh Allen. I mean, he's not one of those guys. And he's aging even more.
So Stafford's got 13 years in the league, right? So
he's 35. He's not that much younger than Aaron
Rodgers. Is he one of these guys? Is he an Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady, fountain of youth guy? Or is he like most of them in 35 that we're going to be on the decline?
I think when the Rams signed him, they knew what they were. I think they knew that he was likely not that. You hope he's that.
Contract goes through 26.
Right. You hope he's Aaron Rodgers, but you want to win a Super Bowl. He gives you your best chance of winning a Super Bowl now. You ink him for that deal. You go and win a Super Bowl. I think it's worth it. I just think they kind of have to pay for it on the back end. I think they're paying for what they had.
Yeah, I don't know. In the mock drafts, what are they talking about speculation for the Rams? Do you know? Do you have any sense of that?
I've seen all kinds of.
It would seem like a team to be looking at a developmental quarterback prospect as well.
Yeah. I don't think they have a first round pick.
Yeah, maybe they don't. Maybe that was
Stetson Bennett going and playing behind Stafford.
Doug, the rumor on Stetson Bennett, right?
Cowboys.
Is now he the Ravens.
Oh, I saw with Monken. He's not athletically. Yeah. You put him with Lamar Jackson, no chance.
It's a change of pace.
No chance. And they have the Ravens have a good QB too as well, Huntley. Yeah. But I saw a rumor for him to the Cowboys, and honestly, I can see that.
It seems like Jerry Jones would be taking him to brunch. He'd love the kid.
I remember when Jerry Jones was flirting with the idea of Johnny Manziel, and I think this is his chance.
Yeah, it's a third round Johnny Manziel,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. I mean, I think I could see him going that path, and I could. So his arrest was in Dallas, I believe. I believe it was in Dallas, so that it would just kind of come full circle that way. And he's kind of got that cocky Dallas Cowboy aura to him. So I don't know. I could see that being a later round quarterback take. And then it would be one of those things where you would have fans pushing for him to play at some point if the starter isn't playing at the level they want him to. And it's kind of absurd to think about that with Dak Prescott. But nonetheless, that's how fans behave.
And I love it.
I could see it. I could see it happening.
In some ways, he's the perfect fit for that. Yeah. Okay, Doug, let's sort of pick up the pace here just a little bit. We also have the Seattle Seahawks. This was one of the bigger surprises last year. It looked like Seattle was essentially almost trust the process, kind of going into tanking mode last year. And Geno Smith had a career year with 30 touchdowns and 11 interceptions. And I think the Seahawks may have been just above. They're right around 500, if not a game above. Let me check this.
I think as far as rehabilitation project quarterbacks go, Geno Smith's 32 years old. To take a guy at that age who hasn't had much success as a starter in the NFL and totally transform him or see him transform, that doesn't happen very often. I mean, that's what I'm... If I'm taking on Baker Mayfield this year, if I'm the Panthers, that's what I'm hoping for. I'm hoping we can still get his potential out of him. And I know people probably feel that way taking on like Mitch Trubisky or whatnot, even though some of these players feel like a lost cause. But Geno Smith, I think he felt like a lost cause to a lot of people. And to go out and have the year that he had, a Pro Bowl year as far as what he how he performed. And I don't know that he played in the Pro Bowl, but he earned a spot. And all that said, if I'm the Seahawks, I still don't feel like I have my quarterback of the future. If the right guy's available in the draft, I'm taking him. Sorry, Geno.
No, you know what, Doug? What I take away from Geno Smith last year is that Pete Carroll might be an even better coach than I thought. Right? I mean, and with Carroll, I actually go back to what he accomplished at USC, because there was a time when Carroll had that program essentially operating like Alabama operates now.
Yep.
Right? Where it was just they reloaded every year, and they were just blowing people off.
Quarterbacks like Matt Leinart, Carson Palmer. They had, who was it, the backup that ended up being an NFL starter for a while. I mean, they were, and running back Reggie Bush, like Lindell White, that team, those teams were so stacked. They were winning so many championships. I think USC wants to be that again, by the way, and they're playing. They're playing like some serious money ball, not in an analytics sense, just purely throwing money at football players. But that's kind of been their strategy. But what impresses me the most about Pete Carroll is the fact that what if Russell Wilson wasn't as elite as we thought he was this whole time? And he was just in a great system.
That's my whole point, right?
Yeah.
That with most of these guys, when the quarterback leaves, this was always the thing with Belichick and Brady, right?
Right, right.
And so these partnerships are really – Tomlin and Roethlisberger, these partnerships are impossible to disentangle. And so Russell Wilson left to a terrible performance at Denver, and Geno Smith has a career year. I think you've got to – look, I mean, and I think people should take note of that. In some ways, if I'm a rookie quarterback, I'm a free agent quarterback – I kind of think I might want to go to Seattle, right? That this is something where I'm going to have my game elevated.
Yeah, and Russell Wilson's 34, so he's a little bit older. But again, going back to Stafford, I mean, Stafford's 35. Like, that does seem like that age is about where guys start to fall off, typically, unless it's Aaron Rodgers or Tom Brady, exception to the rule. And so, yeah, I mean, I think the right, like, if I'm Anthony Richardson and I can play for the Seahawks in an offense where Geno Smith did what he did and where an aging Russell Wilson was making the playoffs annually and performing at a really high level, I think that could be the perfect fit for a guy like that. And
now then you get into the other side of it. You almost want to look at the quarterbacks that a guy like Carroll or a guy like Belichick want.
Yeah.
Right.
I don't know. I think that Seahawks could see them taking a first round quarterback, the right guys there. And
well, like, I could, even if they have some confidence in Geno, it's time to do it, right?
Well,
it's,
he's kind of the perfect placeholder guy in the sense that you could bring in a Will Levis or Anthony Richardson and not feel the pressure to start him because you're winning games with Geno Smith and still develop a younger player. I remember when Eli Manning came into the Giants and Kerry Collins was the starting quarterback. Kerry Collins, and then Kurt Warner was the starting quarterback, and Warner started the majority of that first season, and he went on to, he played in a Super Bowl for the Cardinals after that. Like, he was still a legitimate starting NFL quarterback, but he was older, and there was no sense that this guy's the future of the franchise. But it took some of the pressure off Eli Manning, where you could work him in and develop him. And Patrick Mahomes had that under Alex Smith when he came into Kansas City, and so we've seen that as a successful formula. And I think Geno Smith's kind of the right guy to have in front of a player like that, where he's, I mean, to have the success that he's had, he's doing things the right way. And yet he probably doesn't have the ego of an Aaron Rodgers. You don't want Aaron Rodgers to get supplanted midseason by his backup. Geno Smith has been a backup for the majority of his career. And so it does seem like a good situation for a young quarterback, especially.
Okay, Doug, last guy in the NFC West in this closes out our retrospective look at the 2022 quarterback narratives is a guy that I have not been particularly kind to. Now, again, when I say that, it's always based on the analytics, at least as the starting point. Of all the quarterbacks who have signed big money deals, Kyler Murray was the one that, frankly, I was the most suspicious of, or the most dubious of, or doubtful about. Looking at the data, I just didn't see it. And there was a moment where, and again, this market moves so fast. Is Murray still a top five paid quarterback? I mean, he got big money. There was always, remember the weirdness when he got the money and there was like something in the contract that
film.
He had to watch film.
And then it became a question of, was he not watching film before? Right.
And then you look at the production last year, and look, if I'm the Arizona Cardinals, I'm really starting to wonder. It's like, I wouldn't be surprised if they were drafting a third round pick, that kind of developmental prospect, just to have a backup depending on how this goes moving forward.
Murray, I believe, is going to be the fourth highest paid guy this year behind Hurts, Rodgers, Russell Wilson, and in front of Deshaun Watson. So there's Wilson, Murray, Watson. None of those are particularly great values.
It's amazing how many mistakes are made paying people that position, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, of course, Patrick Mahomes is not a mistake no matter what you pay him. And
no, and you know what?
It kind of varies by, if you're looking at just the cap or what the base salary or what
the almost impossible to decipher. But this is the thing. Signing Kyler Murray always felt a little bit risky looking at the numbers, looking at his performance. Signing Joe Burrow to a mega deal doesn't feel risky, right? Yeah. Signing Patrick Mahomes, giving him even more money, doesn't feel risky.
No.
Right. And so it's these big money deals for these second tier guys that just strikes me as sort of just, I'm still amazed at the number of GMs that are willing to do that, right? And I think they think of it as the conservative approach, but it just sort of slots you in. I was going to say it slots you into being an 8-8 kind of team. But in the case of the Cardinals, I don't even think they were close to 500 last year.
Yeah, 8-8's probably sounded pretty good. The worst, I don't like Russell Wilson's contract.
They were 4-13, Doug, with
one of the top paid quarterbacks. Yeah, that's not good. I don't like Russell Wilson's contract. I think my least favorite contract has got to be Deshaun Watson, because I'm looking at it right now, and the most guaranteed money is Deshaun Watson.
That's a Cleveland contract. You got to separate that out as a different category.
I'm just saying that, like, it's interesting to me that he has the most guaranteed money, because it wasn't even, when they signed him, it wasn't even guaranteed that he was going to be able to play. So you would think that like he would have the least guaranteed money and the most incentives, but in fact,
picks, right?
Yes. So he's, I mean, that, I think it's the worst contract in football right now. And I think that it screwed up.
It might
up.
Be the worst trade, right? It might be the worst deal as well.
Yeah. It screwed up everyone who is now signing quarterbacks, because that's the standard. And Kyler Murray's up there, but man, that Deshaun Watson deal is bad. And that's one sense in which Kyler Murray is up there. He's not often up there.
Yeah. Okay, Doug, I think we're kind of hitting our time this week. Anything else you want to mention from the world of sports? I can tell you that this last weekend was the 2023 World Strongest Man competition. I love World Strongest Man competition. I'm amazed with all the programming that is broadcast, that is in fact not broadcast live on TV. And so I think it's broadcast on CBS later in the summer. It was won by Mitchell Hooper from Canada. It is one of my favorite things to watch. If I'm flipping through ESPN, and I don't even know if they still cover this, those late night things where you're seeing Magnuson or Brian Shaw or Eddie Hall or Big Z lifting cars over and over again, pulling airplanes with their teeth, all that kind of stuff. I love that. I don't understand why that's not a bigger sport.
Toxic masculinity. That's my two-word answer. My two-word answer.
Okay. And you know what? That's a good phrase to end it on this week. So as always, or soon, more, like I said, I'm kind of teasing this up. Like my day job as a professor, I got a lot of grading to do, but we will start to get the 2023 Next Generation Fandom Survey out, and the NFL fan equity stuff is just about ready to go. So it'll be a busy May for us next week.